We'll present the October 22, 2010 edition of the Rin Report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Radio Amateur Information Network studio in Chicago, I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK, with this week's Rin Report. If you have toured the headquarters of the ARRL, the National Organization of Amateur Radio in America, or if you read QST, the monthly publication of the League, you'll recognize the name Ed Hare, W1RFI, laboratory manager of the ARRL. In his presentation given at the 2010 Dayton Hamvention, Ed talked about RFI basics.
I'm Ed Hare, W1RFI. I'm the ARRL's laboratory manager. And I've had a little bit to do with RFI over the years. This is the people we have working in the laboratory. I'm the lab dad. We have Zach, W1VT, our senior lab engineer. Mike Gruber, W1MG, he's our RFI engineer. Bob Allison, he's here at Dayton. He's doing the kit building down there and the ARRL Expo. He's our product review test engineer. And we have Tony Nesta, administrative assistant. Now, I've been at ARRL headquarters since 1986. I was first licensed in 1963 as WN1CYF, the crazy young fellow. Prior to coming to headquarters, I worked as an IC test engineer, radio, television, TV repair. And at this point, I'm now serving amateur radio, not only running the lab, but on a number of the IEEE and ANSI-accredited EMC committees. I'm also famous for some of my QRP work. Here's Zach Lau, W1VT, our senior lab engineer. And Zach's famous for a lot of his interest in microwaves. In fact, when you walk into the lab, you'll see his station is set up in the lab, all these microwave dishes. When he was single, he used to take them out to mountaintops. Now that he's married, he goes to the beach. I don't quite understand this, but that's fine by us, I guess. Bob Allison, WB1GCM, the newest guy in the lab, and he's doing product review testing for us. That's a lot of fun. It's a job I did when I first came to headquarters. In the middle is Mike Gruber, W1MG, and he's actually ARRL's RFI engineer. I can't convince him to get the call K1RFI. For some reason, Mike Gruber thinks W1MG is a good call. He says it's not because of his name, it's because of his love of MG cars. In the laboratory, we do a wide range of things. Product testing, of course. Those of you who have read QST magazine have seen what the manufacturer claimed and what they measured in the lab results. We do that in the lab. We have technical information now offered primarily on our web page. We also take a lot of phone calls and emails. I'm here to talk a little bit about our RFI program, specifically to power line noise. I've also been involved in a lot of spectrum protection work, helping our DC office with filings with the FCC. And yes, we'll have to say the B word, BPL. It's still around. I'm still doing some of the work in that area. But we're not here to talk about it. Now, here's a shot of the ARRL lab. I'll be honest with you, this is not the picture we took of the lab the day we cleaned it up for the company brochure. If you ever come to the lab, you'll see a nice display case that holds some of the projects we've worked on over the years. Now, I have rules when I give my presentations. Some of you have seen me speak before understand this. It's okay to get up and leave. If this isn't exactly what you thought it would be, or if you suddenly remember where that all-mode HF transceiver is under the table for $15 in working conditions, I'll understand if you sprint out of the room. Everybody has to laugh at my jokes. I have a new rule. I'm the only one allowed to tell any jokes. Go ahead, ask questions anytime. If I know the answer, I'll tell you. If I don't know the answer, I'll make up something I'm pretty sure you're going to believe. And falling asleep, it's okay, especially you guys in the back. We might be better off. But do me a favor. If I'm doing a good job up here, fall asleep with your head tipped forward. If I'm doing a bad job, fall asleep with your head tipped back. This way here, I don't have to stand up here wondering how I'm doing. I'm just going to look around the room. Power line noise. It's a bigger problem for amateur radio, as much as BPL has been promoted and talked about. Power line noise is a bigger problem for amateur radio than BPL. More hams suffer from power line noise right now than will ever suffer from broadband over power line. How many guys in this room have had a problem with power line noise in their station? That's why you're here. Even when I go to club talks, where it's a more general thing, most of the hands go up. ARRL has a full-time RF engineer, Mike Gruber, who works on a lot of these power line cases. He works regularly with me, so I'm very, very familiar with his work. So although he couldn't come to Dayton this year, I certainly could. So we have most people here with power line noise. Now, how many people who had power line noise have had that problem reported to the FCC? Or how many people have reported it to ARRL? Relatively few, and I'm here to talk a little bit, and Mike Gruber's not going to like this because a lot of you guys are going to take advantage of some of the things I'm going to show you. Power line noise is often misunderstood in the amateur community. many, many, many electrical noise sources or other things are confused with power line noise. Fluorescent lights, lamp dimmers, plasma TVs. I think some of you may have seen some of the online discussions about those. Switching mode power supplies, very common noise sources. Every microprocessor controlled everything can make noise. And oftentimes we find when hams contact us about power line noise, the source is ultimately located in their own home. It's sometimes hard to differentiate between power line noise and some of the other electrical noise sources that are out there. When you get power line noise, who's responsible? Well, that differentiation is important. If you're going to contact your power company about power line noise, you need to make sure it really is their equipment that's causing the problem. It could well be from other sources. The sources could be in your own home even, or perhaps in the homes of your neighbors. Now, unlicensed device manufacturers have certain responsibilities. They need to make equipment according to FCC rules. It may need to meet certain emissions limits. Ultimately, though, a lot of the times, all sorts of electrical noise problems stem down to the responsibility of the operator of that unlicensed device. What's a power company responsible for? Their own equipment. Power line companies must correct any interference caused to licensed radio services if it's coming from their own equipment. They're not responsible for other noise sources. Now, a lot of times, and some of you here have talked to me in the past or recently about this, about power companies will come out and help find that, well, there's a problem in this guy's house over here, or there's a problem over there. Well, they're doing that as a customer service. That's great, but ultimately, they're responsible only for their own equipment. The biggest problem we've run into some of the problems with power companies, though, is they're not always skilled and trained at finding noise sources, their own or others. And sometimes power companies will misidentify non-power company equipment as the noise source. So they got a ham who's reporting noise. They find, well, there's a neon sign like 4 miles away. That must be his noise source. And in reality, so they've not found the pole that's literally sometimes right outside the guy's house. Well, there are FCC rules about this, and a lot of the misunderstandings we run into with hams that call us are, what are those rules? Well, power lines and most devices like motors of power lines and spark welders or arc welders, that sort of thing, are incidental emitters. They don't intentionally generate RF inside them, but they happen to radiate some or conduct some noise away as an incidental part of their operation. You have other things that can make noise too. Computers, switching mode power supplies that do intentionally have RF inside them, but don't intentionally radiate it. And that's called an unintentional emitter. Now, with an incidental emitter, it's an important distinction because there are no specific limits on the amount of noise an incidental emitter can make. There's no limit on the amount of power line noise, for example. There's no limit on the amount of noise that can come out of a motor. Just two requirements. The requirement that the device be designed using good engineering practice, whatever that actually means, and the requirement that the operator of same do so in a way that doesn't cause harmful interference. Now, for unintentional emitters like computers, power supplies, battery chargers in some cases, there are limits, but there are only conducted emissions limits below 30 megahertz. So that plasma TV, for example, it has conducted emissions limits below 30, the amount of noise it can put onto the power line, no radiated emissions limits below 30 megahertz. Above 30 megahertz, the situation is reversed. Now, the premise is that generally, small devices like this computer are not going to radiate much on HF. This would be a very poor HF antenna, but that power line it's connected to will be a good antenna, so the FCC is trying to control noise by controlling the amount of signals conducted onto the power line.
You're listening to a 2010 Dayton Hamvention talk about RFI basics by Ed Hare, W1RFI, ARRL laboratory manager. We'll continue his presentation in a moment. This is the Rain Report, being heard on Thursday nights in Illinois across Will and DuPage counties on the Bolingbrook Amateur Radio Society's 2-meter repeater information net at 8 on 147.33 MHz, 107.2 PL required. This is the Rain Report.
A lot of this then boils down to an important part of the rules, because I talked about the operator of the device needs to do so in a way that doesn't cause harmful interference. Well, harmful interference has a definition in the FCC rules. It doesn't mean zero interference. It's defined as any disruption of emergency communication services and the repeated disruption or serious degradation of other licensed radio services. Now, I'll give you a couple of examples. Is at home, I can hear a few birdies from my neighbor's computer systems. Well, if those don't fall on 7030 kilohertz, my favorite QRP frequency, chances are they're not going to cause me interference. I'll just tune a kilohertz away, call CQDX with my 10 milliwatts and get zero answers there as well as anywhere else. In that case, I probably wouldn't necessarily have harmful interference from a small number of noise sources in my band. My next door neighbor turns on an outside light every night when it gets dark, and for the first 20 seconds, it makes noise, then the light comes on full and the noise goes away. Well, is that really harmful interference? If I called FCC, would they probably do much about it? More than likely not. Well, harmful interference is in the eye of the beholder. Now, when we get cases of power line noise, S9+, and I think most of you have had that level of noise probably in your power line case, there's no doubt that's harmful interference to amateur radio. It's S9+, it's on almost 24 hours a day, or at least for weeks and hours at a time, and it's going to be harmful interference in anybody's mind more than likely. Well, what if you lived in a really, really quiet area and suddenly you have this noise source come up at S1? It's covering up some of the signals you might hear. How would that be seen by, say, FCC or your power company in terms of harmful interference? And then that gray area that I kind of dread. What do you do with a guy who says, I have S6 noise? Well, we're hams. We know that this is interference, but how the power company and FCC see that could be something different. Right now, most of the cases we're working with FCC are really dealing with some pretty strong noise sources. For those ones in the middle, I usually suggest to hams, if you could find that noise source for the power company, even if it's like a mile away, and it might be, you can usually get them to fix it if you can help them identify it. Now, of course, when there's interference, we've seen some of these power companies respond to our letters and the FCC letters by having their lawyers write things like, well, it's interference, but not harmful interference as defined by the FCC's rules. Now, one day I was giving a presentation at an Electric Power Research Institute facility in Massachusetts. It was on broadband over power line, but it's the same principle. One of the EPRI guys said, well, harmful interference is not defined in the FCC's rules. I says, yes, but every utility guy in the room will understand that I'll tell you harmful interference occurs when the utility complaint line rings and all the heads are bobbing up and down. So from the utility perspective, if we can get them to better understand that dealing with complaints is in their best interest, I think we'll be able to do more and more for the amateurs. Well, as I said, for the legal limits, there are none. For incidental emitters, just the requirement not to cause harmful interference. For the unintentional emitters, below 30 megahertz, 1,000 microvolts can be conducted into the line over most of HF. Above 30 megahertz, typically 100 to 150 microvolts per meter, 3 meters from the source, is the legal limit for noise from unlicensed devices. I'll translate this to terms hams understand. That's typically about S7 from a neighbor's house. You have a neighbor 100 feet away, and he has a, quote, legal device that's making noise on your favorite frequency right at the limit. That's an S7 noise level. So when hams are reporting, well, some device in my neighbor's house is 30 over S9, I can tell you from experience that device is probably making more noise than the rules allow. It's also about S9 or a little bit more if that device is in your own home. Okay, so we have a noise source, and we've decided it's definitely harmful interference. Well, now what? Well, the smartest thing to do is to identify the source to the extent you can and start with your own house. I suggest to hams, get a battery-operated receiver, preferably put it into the AM mode. You'll hear the noise. Start turning off all of the breakers one at a time inside your house. And, of course, if it's coming from your house, as you turn off the right breaker, the noise would go away. Well, of course, we've had this discussion with some amateurs. Well, oh, no, it is me. Well, I think we need the FCC to do something about this horrible situation. I point out that the manufacturer of that device has probably met its requirements. So the FCC's only recourse would be to fine the operator of the unlicensed device. And Riley once offered to a ham who was insisting that the FCC do something that he would issue that ham a fine of $10,000 per day of occurrence, and suddenly the amateur didn't want the FCC's help after all. And so the FCC really is going to have little sympathy for interference from devices in your own home. This can be in some cases unfortunate, because if I go tell my wife she's not watching TV anymore, this will not go well. We're doing what we can to work with the industry. I'll explain a little of that as we go on. But in reality, under the present rule structure, interference from devices in your own house is going to be a problem between you and the operator of that unlicensed device, whether it's you and or members of your family. Well, a good first step on this, of course, is to try to pin down where this source is. And many, many consumer-type devices, light dimmers, for example, fluorescent lights, can mimic power line noise. So if you're going to contact the power company, it's a good idea to run through some of those tests and find the device in your house that's causing it. Well, what if it's not in your house? Well, okay, it's coming from somewhere outside the house. And at this point, you can run through the same steps with a neighbor if you have a cooperative neighbor. In other cases, of course, you go knocking on the neighbor's door and say, oh, George, some device in your house is causing interference to my ham radio. And George's face lights right up. So the tables have turned, have they? And you may or may not get cooperation from George. And frankly, I can imagine in my own neighborhood having to have that conversation with a neighbor. That's a difficult conversation. ARRL can certainly help. We don't mind. If you think it's best, contacting a neighbor on your behalf with a letter that explains the rules and that sort of thing, and a few hams have asked us to, but I strongly think most of the time local solutions to local problems are best. You know that neighbor better than I do. You know what will make him happy and what will make him less happy. And so, you know, although we don't mind helping out, we usually suggest you talk to the neighbor and try to resolve it. Well, if you are convinced that the noise is power line noise, and that's really the thrust of most of this presentation, the good part is that the rules say that that electric utility company is required to find it and fix it. Now, you could stand right by your guns and say, look, it's your problem, you're making the noise, I'm not doing a thing to help, it's your job to find it and fix it. Well, I suppose it's the moral high ground, but it's the practical low ground. Because in reality, a lot of these utility companies are just not skilled at finding and fixing power line noise, especially some of the smaller ones. Some hams have decided, correctly so, that it's in their best interest to help the utility try to identify what that noise source is. In some cases, that'll really facilitate getting a timely response out of them.
The Thoughts and Observations About RFI by Ed Hare, W1RFI, the Laboratory Manager for the ARRL in Newington, Connecticut. We'll hear more about RFI basics from Ed next week. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2010. Rain, all rights are reserved. Now for Rain's founder and producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK, bidding you all a very 73 from all of us at the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.